Hi, I'm Kaylin B. Daphne, and this is Zen Mama and Everyday Gurus.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks for coming back to the podcast. And another amazing soul has joined me here today, and I'm super excited to have this conversation. I hope you're all doing well as we continue to navigate our way through this current time and all that's happening. I feel like we're all breathing a little better around what's happening, even though I know sometimes it doesn't feel that way. I was at a soccer game last night, just went to pick up one of the kids that wanted to stay and watch the girls' game. And I had my puppy with me, and a mama came over just to say hello, someone I knew sort of. And we just like sat there on the earth with the puppy and just had the greatest conversation about parenting and how hard it is and how we cry and laugh every day and how we, you know, have joy and fear and all the things to do with raising kids. And, you know, we just, I think, both had this really intimate, very vulnerable and real conversation. And then, you know, the game ended, we got up and walked back into our lives. And, you know, just a little further down the path because of it, right? And a little healed from whatever needed to be healed in that moment. So I'm so grateful to be able to go out to games and to connect with people on the sidelines and out into life. So I guess I'm just sharing that and like, don't underestimate the power of us showing up for each other and just being vulnerable and honest right now, because it's really the most we can do for each other, right? Is show up as the truest version of ourselves. And to hold space for non-judgment. Yeah. So that aside, and I think we'll talk about this today too, because it's so relevant to what we do here on the show, was talk about people finding meaning and purpose in their life and just being seekers and maybe having struggles that actually push them further into finding their authenticity and truth and the work they want to be sharing with the world. And that's the guest I have on today. And Caitlin and I met a few years ago. We were doing yoga teacher training in Burlington, Vermont together. And I feel like such a gift to have had our paths come together. And, you know, I just, I saw her as a light, a beautiful woman and a beautiful light then, and such a gentle soul. And I've watched her from a distance sort of evolving and moving. She moved out of Burlington, and I'll let her tell the story of how that all evolved. But, you know, and she's just, I don't know, what I feel like is she's not settling on showing up in a way other than how she completely wants to show up and find what she's here to do. And so this is going to be a juicy conversation. I'm excited about it. So let's get started. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, Mary. Thank you so much. This is an honor to be here, truly. I'm so thankful that our paths did cross. We did our 200 yoga teacher training together at Laughing River Yoga with Emily and Sophie already 3 or 4 years ago. And same, I've been watching you from a distance and I love what you are doing. And this podcast, and you inspire so many of us. And remember you being in that training because we were in small group together. So we did a lot of great, you know, small group work and thinking, she's learning so much. And I also wondered why you weren't teaching the program. I thought she already knows so much, and she embodies so many of the yogic principles that we were learning. So,
well, thanks, Caitlin. I don't know that I felt that way in that period in time, which I guess just goes to show you never know like what gifts you're giving when you don't even realize you're giving them, right? And that's something I just had to sort of begin to embody and understand when I try to overextend myself, is just sometimes showing up, you know, and being grounded and doing the things I need to do to be well is actually like maybe, you know, all I really need to do some days.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. And having the courage to kind of step into those roles and really own what we do know, right? Yeah. Accepting that we don't know everything, but really owning and sharing what we do know. And that yoga training for me was a real turning point in terms of stepping more fully into my own power. And I remember you mentioned this when we were talking just a little while ago about me getting up in front of the class and telling everyone, I'm so nervous speaking in front of a group. And you told me it didn't seem like it at all.
No.
That's been part of my journey, is really like stepping out more and more into this new role that I'm embodying.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I really admired about your courage there was that you just called it out. Right. And I think that to me, like, I think I always hid behind my vulnerability. And I think what we're learning, luckily we have some wonderful teachers out there to help us understand that stepping into it and calling it out actually helps to lose its power over us. Absolutely. And you totally did that. And I mean, I remember that so well. I'm like, because it didn't come across that way at all, but for you, it let you settle into yourself and continue to do that. And here you are.
Yeah.
So beautiful. So we did our training. You were doing some health coaching then. And I think you were unattached in a relationship. You had just, I think, been out of a relationship for a little while and was healing from that and sort of finding your way. Yeah.
Yes. That winter was such a healing winter. I think it was winter 2017-18 in Vermont. And I lived in this beautiful home with other wise women. And I dove into that yoga training and I just immersed myself in the healing arts. I had just come out of a very committed, long relationship. It was not a very good ending. And I was really reeling from a lot. And that training helped ground me and center me. And I have to just say that the yin yoga classes offered by Emily Garrett on Wednesday nights, that was a pivotal part of my healing journey that winter. You know, it was winter time too in Vermont. And so I just went really deeply inward and had to do a lot of grieving, both from that relationship. And also I was kind of going into deeper layers of grief around the loss of my father, who had passed away just a few years before that. That grief that I had held in my body and not fully confronted. Nothing like slowing down and doing some deep yin practice to help bring out what you've been harboring in your body and in your heart.
Yeah.
You know, I know in yoga we often say the issues in the tissues. And
that was that's for sure. So can you maybe just explain what a yin practice is for people that don't know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm by no means an expert in yin, but when I think of yin, I think of it as a very slow, nourishing practice where you are mostly on the ground. You might be on, you know, hands and knees a little bit, but it's static, long-held poses. So 3 to 5 minutes. And it's not about going to your full range of motion. It's, you know, going to 50 to 70% of that. And it's a gentle practice where we don't warm the body up before, like in vinyasa, and then kind of go into these deep, deep stretches. It's really actually a cooling practice. Yin is cooling to our bodies. And so we actually keep our bodies relatively cool so we can kind of get into those more plastic tissues that take longer to kind of stretch a little bit, in our joints especially. So that's a little bit more of like the physical practice. For me, it became a very meditative practice. Like every one of those holds, 3 to 5 minutes, right? Being lying on your back on a bolster as a chest opener, let's say, with the knees in butterfly, I mean, every single one of those poses is like a mini meditation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to, a lot comes up when you're asked to be with your body for 3 to 5 minutes at a time, mm-hmm. often in silence. But the experience of being in a room full of people practicing yin together is also in and of itself, I think, very nourishing.
Yeah. There is nothing like community, I think, when it comes to those practices or yoga or anything, honestly. But the other thing I'm just going to add to the yin piece is that, you know, we introduce and use props, which, so you're being held, your edge is being touched upon, as Caitlin mm-hmm. said. And I love Emily. She's just like, okay, get there and stay there, you know, yeah. like commit to the pose, you know, and yeah. find your breath. And then when you feel the discomfort, like feel the discomfort, right? The yeah. things we try not to feel, you know, and what's there. And when we allow that, can be incredibly powerful and incredibly healing and incredibly hard.
Yeah.
You know, but sometimes that's what we need. Yeah.
I did some really wonderful studying with two yin teachers here in Maine, Terry Coburn and Josh Summers. They run now the River Bird Sangha in Maine. Mm. And another piece that I just love that they always wove in was that none of these poses are supposed to look a certain way. Mm. And they really emphasize the individuality of every single body and every skeletal makeup. Mm. And so every single pose, rather than aiming for the pose that is presented in Yoga Journal, it is what is the pose that gets into the tissues that we're targeting in your body. Mm-hmm. And I just found that really beautiful too. And yeah. again, that's aligning with like, what is the truth of your body? And so that's also challenging for us to tune down the outside noise that tells us it really should look like this. We should mm-hmm. really go this deep into it for it to be quote unquote correct. Mm-hmm. And listening to your body and feeling like, how do I make this pose serve me in the best mm-hmm. way?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
That's nice. And tapping into this like innate intelligence that we have. Yeah. But you know, it is a hard practice. Like some people would say, you know, to have that be your first practice, even though it might look from the outside world in like, oh, that's easy peasy, right? It's actually one of the harder practices, even though it's not like this yangy flow thing. So I was actually teaching a class at the recovery center this morning that I work at, Sana and Stowe, and a young woman towards the end, it was a mindful, gentle mm-hmm. flow where you're really asked to breathe, you know, in a meditative way as you do it. And we got towards the end and she was like, wow, this is really hard. And I guess I'm not as in good shape as you. And I'm like, oh, is it hard because of that? Or is it hard because you're actually really being asked to be present with what's happening, right?
Yes. Yes.
So it's an interesting journey, this yoga. You know, whatever brings you to the mat, I would just say, whatever you need, it will meet you there, right?
Yes, and slowing down and really being in our bodies, that's a challenge. Mm-hmm. That's a practice.
It is a practice
worthy of taking up, but it is challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing all of that. So, tell me, I think within a year after you left, we graduated, you left Burlington, right? Or tell us a little more about what happened after that.
Yeah. I crossed paths with a very good friend from my hometown of Freeport, Maine. And we had kind of been in touch on and off over the years, just maintained a really great friendship, Jake. And we ended up just totally falling in love.
Aww.
All these years later.
Love that.
We hadn't seen each other in well over a decade and came home for Christmas at the same time. And, you know, from that point on, it just became really clear. Okay, now we're cultivating a life together. Mm. How are we going to do this? He was currently living in Seattle and I was in Burlington. And I decided that, you know, because of all the uprooting I had just done in Burlington, I was ready to leave. Mm. And interestingly though, before kind of meeting Jake and thinking, okay, I'm going to head out west, which I love the west. I lived out in Oregon and in Colorado. Okay. I was excited to go back to the Pacific Northwest. But prior to that plan, I had thought I'd move into the Green Mountains, deeper into the woods. I really wanted more simplicity, calm, less stimulation of the city. And so what did I do? I moved to Seattle. such a bustling place.
Yeah.
And, you know, so much good came out of moving there, as well as a lot of challenge. I drove across the country that summer and Jake and I moved in together, and such a testament to our bond, because that first year was really rather stressful. He had a very demanding job and it took him away a lot. And so he was traveling many weekends. And so here I was in this very unfamiliar city on my own, didn't really have much of a community. And I just started going inward. I really took those weekends to take really long walks with my dog all over the beautiful Seattle neighborhoods and parks. I continued a yin practice. I read, I journaled. I knew deep within I wasn't going to be in Seattle long term. But I knew this time had something to offer me. I read at that time the book by Sue Monk Kidd, When the Heart Waits.
Yeah.
And it's a whole book that beautifully speaks to this cocooning period that has to happen when things are incubating inside of you. And it's a very uncomfortable time because we're shedding an old identity. We don't yet know what our new identity is. So we're kind of in this in-between. And so there's a lot of grieving that has to happen and slowing down and nourishing. And without understanding that that actually was something that I would really embody and start to coach people on about a year and a half later is really fascinating to me.
Yeah.
I now coach a lot of my clients about this very model of change. It's called the change cycle. And it all begins with anytime there's a catalytic event that happens in your life, whether welcome or unwelcome. The pandemic is a really great example of that for all of us. A catalytic event means that your life changes in such a way that you can no longer go back to living like you were before. There has to be a shedding of an old identity and a growing of a new identity. But the first stage that we move into from a catalytic event, whether an opportunity, a new job, something very welcome like a birth of a baby, getting married, things like that, or if it's a shock, right? Unexpected and not very welcome, like the death of a loved one, a pandemic. We move into what's called square one of the change cycle. And this I by no means came up with. This is all a model of change created by Martha Beck, who is the master life coach that wrote all the curriculum for my life coach training.
Okay.
And square one is all about grieving and disbelieving. So allowing ourselves to grieve the pain that needs to move through us, and disbelieving any thoughts or stories we're carrying that are not true and that are holding us in fear and shame. And the whole stage is just about slowing down and nourishing, like doing less, saying no more, taking care of yourself, tending to your heart.
Which is super hard, right? I mean, can we just pause at that? I want you to tell the whole thing because I'm so curious about this. But I mean, we're basically live in a world that asks us to do everything but that, right? Yes. I mean, in a very yang world, I mean, COVID forced a lot of us to be still, and that was really hard for a lot of people. But I love that idea of leaning in, right? Leaning into the discomfort And that actually within that, there's this ability to transform.
Yeah. And the idea is that if you try to rush that process, you perpetuate that pain and that suffering. Mm-hmm. And so when you really lean into it, there's no control over when it will end. Kind of just like we've all been through catalytic changes in our lives, and we know it's like you don't really know when it's going to end. But if you lean into it, you will get to the other side of it.
Yeah.
And you know when you're moving to the other side of it, when hope starts to return.
Okay.
When you start to have fresh ideas. And then we get to move into the next stage, which is one of dreaming and scheming. We start to imagine
what
our new identity, new chapter of our life is going to look like. And that's essentially what I did. I kind of had to move through that really tough period. And also recognize that while Seattle is a beautiful, thriving city, I was not going to be able to live the life I wanted to live there. Mm. Luckily, my husband Jake was on the very same page. He had outgrown the city. And so we decided after 15 years away from Maine, I basically left Maine when I graduated high school and just lived abroad and all over the country. So it had been 15 years and I was ready to just go home and go back to Maine. Wow. So we made the trek.
Did that come up during your process for you, that, you know, your roots of home or that familiarness, or, I mean, yeah.
I think it did. I think if I had stayed in Vermont, I would have stayed in Vermont. Mm. But I would have moved out into the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And the extent to which the city exhausted me and uprooted me made me want nothing more than to like really create a new root system in the place that I already have roots.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So I'm curious, and I think people listening, it would be helpful to understand, because I also was curious till you said that, like that you, it's almost like your nervous system, right, was not compatible with that kind of energy, which some people is. It's, yeah. You know, we are all bio-individual individuals. So part of it is like getting in your body and feeling, right, and out of our heads a little bit about what we think we know and what we think we aspire to, even, because it sounds to me like before, because sometimes we put that like, I want to do this or be this, and that, like, you think that's the catalyst to your change. But actually, it's like feeling the discomfort going into that and understanding what your needs are. So you're not just moving from one place to another and bringing the same thing with you, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, this process is really pretty powerful, it sounds like. And what are some of the like practices? I know you said yin was one thing that really helped you move inside. What other practices do you encourage people to do to sort of find their way into that feeling place of what's of healing for what's next?
Something that I really emphasize with my coaching clients now, and something I practice a lot myself, is the body compass. And one of the first things I like to do with every client is to actually walk them through a body compass calibration. And it's this amazing exercise where you kind of take them into a memory of a very unpleasant event, like nothing, not like trauma or like the worst thing, something very unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that as they're fully in that memory, and I ask them to like awaken their senses, like, what does it feel like? What does it smell like? What's the temperature? What's the light like? And they immerse themselves back in this unpleasant experience. And then I have them scan their body. What's going on in your body right now? What are the emotions and the bodily sensations indicating to you there's something out of alignment here? There's something not quite right. And without fail, I mean, it's unique for everyone, but the common signs are like a tightening or a chest heaviness, you know, the inability to take a full breath, clenching of the hands or the jaw, the heart rate increases. And then I'll walk them into, I'm like, okay, shake that off. I know that was really uncomfortable, but now we're going to move into a very pleasant experience. So we do the exact same thing. Immerse yourself fully in that pleasant memory. Okay, now check in with your body. What's going on? And they like take this full breath and their chest opens and they just feel like they just dropped 20 pounds off their shoulders. And I can see it happening. If we're doing a video call, I can see them sit taller. And it's just incredible for them to go through this experience of these are physiological signs from my body telling me like where true north is for me.
Yeah.
And I was doing that in Seattle, not knowing that this was a body compass tool. That's something I learned later and now can term, you know, call it that.
Yeah.
From my training. But I was really just trying to feel into my body. And I think that's where yin opened that up for me. It's like, really, what's going on here? And I didn't know then to kind of like tap into that as frequently as I do now. But it's this idea that our bodies don't lie. And we know this because you can hook someone up to a polygraph test, a lie detector machine, and all of those same symptoms will indicate whether a person is lying or not. And so even though we can be saying something and thinking something and think that's totally true, that's totally real, our body will indicate otherwise. It'll tell us otherwise. And so it's this idea of, you know, being in integrity. Martha Beck just came out with this new book, The Way of Integrity, which is such a capstone on all the work she's done over the past few decades. And it's this idea, integrity not being some lofty, like we're supposed to be nice and good, kind of goody two-shoes idea. Integrity being like structural integrity of our being. So body, heart, soul, and mind are all in alignment. And the easiest way to find your alignment and to figure out how do you get closer to that alignment is through the body. And it's always using your body compass to help you navigate through life. So as we know, I mean, these are, you can use it to navigate really small things like what's on your to-do list. And you can use it to navigate like, is this job offer something I'm going to take?
You know, I love that, Caitlin. That is incredibly, I mean, you just put that, articulated that so well. And again, the evidence of the intelligence of our body. And I'm even, what actually came to me, because I deal with a lot of people that have pain. And so, and I was sort of putting that in context to what you're saying, because that pulls at your attention so much. But that's because it needs to pull at your attention so much. That should be the number one thing that you're healing right before you can get any deeper into what else is there or what, you know?
Yeah. I think like, for example, when I was in Seattle, I had to seek out a chiropractor because I had such seizing of my neck and shoulders. I was waking up in the middle of the night, like writhing in pain. And I had all these physical symptoms come up that were really just my body alerting me to the fact this living here is not serving you. I'm not going to be able to tolerate this.
Yeah.
And so, yes, what you just said is so poignant, because it's like, first nourish the body, slow down and check in with your body, nourish the body. And I think from there, it becomes a lot easier to then make those decisions about which direction to head in life.
Yeah.
If our body is in so much pain and we're coming at it from a very rational, intellectual, I should do this. Well, that makes the most sense.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I feel like we're being, and I think it fits in really well with this idea that a lot of us struggle with, which is that we show up a lot for the external world. In different ways that we've been conditioned to at times, or just believe is part of a role, if it's a label of a mother or a certain type of healthcare provider, whatever it might be. And so it's like such a gift we have that I just don't think we've been given the, I think we've always known, we've just been pulled away from, that deep knowledge that no one is better to direct our life than ourselves. Yeah. It sounds silly, but it's true. Like, we're usually operating from the neck up. And I often use this, like when I get to a point where I feel like everything is a little unmanageable and all my thoughts, I'm starting to lose my way a little bit. And I'm like, land the plane is what I kind of say to myself. And that's sort of like, come into stillness, come into rest, come in and feel what's actually here. And let that other stuff that's buzzing around fall away. But I think you and I talked about this when we had a little conversation a week ago or so about FOMO, like this fear of missing out. And we get pulled, even if it's around being a coach, you're like, oh my gosh, so many people are doing it. And you just want to like make sure you show up before you miss it. And the bottom line is there's enough of it, enough need for it. And we're all special enough that our stuff that we bring up is unique to us and it's necessary and needed, but we need to arrive authentically, not do it like someone else is doing it. And that speaks, not have a marriage like someone else is doing it, because that looks good, but inside you're empty inside, like all the stuff, like you've got to show up from the inside out. When we do it the other way, we're left with some mental health issues, with some dis-ease, however that manifests in your body or your mind. So this is incredibly powerful. If anyone's wondering why coaching is important and why we need it, I mean, what Caitlin's sharing about her process is exactly why, because it takes all the gifts we have and it gives us some direction when we're getting yanged around with this, material human journey. It's not to make it sound like it's not, it doesn't belong. It does belong. But we are humans just making it up as we go. So let's tap into the gifts that we have. And what an incredible tool to do that, Caitlin.
Yeah, absolutely. I so appreciate what you just shared. One of the things that drew me particularly to the Wayfinder Life Coach training created by Martha Beck is this idea of turning down the noise on culture and what society tells us is good and beautiful and successful, and really using our own integrity, our body, our own innate wisdom as our most powerful navigation tools in life. And so when I'm coaching someone, it's fascinating to me how many times I'll hear, oh, well, I should, or well, I could never do that because, like, all of these limitations that it's not our fault. We're putting them on ourselves because we've been conditioned to believe all of these things, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not to blame or shame anyone for believing, like, who am I to be, a life coach and be successful at that? There are, thousands of life coaches out there already. But it's like, what does your intelligence tell you? Mm-hmm. Like, what is your body telling you? If you tap into what really, really lights you up, like for me, I'm kind of putting myself in the role of client here, once I was able to really nourish myself and tap into what I truly like, what makes me come alive, what fuels me, what gives me a sense of purpose, I came full circle back around to coaching. I had left health coaching when I left Vermont. Not because I didn't love coaching, but because it just wasn't the right format for me. And I was in search of a way of offering coaching that was more in alignment with my integrity, that was more authentic to me. And as I move into this role, and like, we're talking about fully owning what we have to offer, fully owning all of the investments we've made in honing these skills, as well as the inherent talents. It's just been amazing to both break down my own limiting beliefs, right? Like applying all of the tools to myself, and also watch what happens when we remove these limitations from our lives. I mean, life is going to present us with its own limitations, its own challenges, you know, but to be able to take the ones that don't really need to be there and clear them out of your path, it kind of blows everything open for you.
Yeah. Would you call that like flow? Would you say that we arrive in that space where things flow to you? I mean, I just know at points when I know I'm on my path and I step back on, I hit the guardrails again and come back in. And then it's like, it's even for the podcast, people just show up. They show up to me versus when I'm doing things in my life that I'm sort of pushing towards, when I can actually sort of get back in center, the flow happens and things actually come to me. Like,
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you seen that happen with people?
It feels like a pulling rather than a pushing. Something's pulling you forward and people are coming into your life or instances are unfolding that when we try to map everything out, there's no way we can predict all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But you're just, you know, you do get into this certain flow. It doesn't mean every day is easy and, you know, smooth or anything like that.
Not at
but
all.
It's just like to say, yeah, like I've just been amazed at, for example, like the business mentors that have just come into my life in the past year. And I'm not going out looking for business mentors and having people literally walk out of the woods and say, just let me know whatever you need. I'd love to just help you along this journey. Yeah. You know, those
it's
guides
so
along
yeah.
the path. It's like they just like fall from heaven. It's so nice.
I know. You have to be in a place to notice, though. I would also say that, and also embrace the serendipitousness of life. And that this is where I kind of come into divine guidance or grace. And when I really can let go of trying to, you know, have it too well planned, or like you said, you can't actually know all the things that you need to do. Well, isn't it like a huge exhale to know we don't have to know? Like, isn't that great? Right?
Absolutely.
We can sort of just do the next right thing with some structure, as you said, but with also some flexibility to move as we're being directed to, you know, that aligns with our heart. Yeah.
You actually right there just described what happens within the container of coaching. Right? Mm. So there's that like safe and trusting space and the client is steering the ship and the coach is there, of course, to partner and to ask the good questions and all of that stuff, but it really is just this like exploration. Let's explore over here. Let's dive further into this. And the client sets the agenda, but me as the coach, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what they're going to say and ultimately what will come out of every session. But it's this idea of being in perpetual creative response to what arises.
Like nice. Do you find that it takes, I mean, everyone comes in a different place and the conditioning is pretty thick sometimes. You know, and so I imagine that peeling back, which might be that first phase, can take some time with people to even like conceptualize some of these ideas or like the non-grasping and the letting go piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's why, it's important to read where someone is, how open they are to different tools. And there's ways I can modify them to make it a little bit of a more comfortable segue into certain tools. But I've been really amazed at, I mean, if you're coming to me, and people usually are coming to me in a form of pain, there's something going on in their life that is really unsettling, really painful. There's an area of their life they are very unsatisfied by, and they're looking to make change. So if they've gotten to that point to reach out, you know, and commit to a program, they're probably going to be pretty open to a lot of the different tools that I'm bringing their way.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always ask permission every tool that I bring up. Is it okay if we do the work, you know, the work of Byron Katie? Is it okay if we do thought work on this particular thought? is it okay if we explore how that fear feels in your body? You know, so there's always the asking of permission first. And then once I have the permission, you know, then we can dive in. And if ever it's uncomfortable or it gets to be too much, you know, they always have the power to say, like,
yeah,
I'm good here. Let's not go any further, you know, but it is deep work. There's absolutely. It's very uncomfortable to face our own anxieties and stresses and depression and unworthiness.
It is interesting. Two things sticking out, just, you know, maybe if we begin to understand pain is a good sign, right? You know, instead of like pushing it away or numbing it. What if we did step into it? You know, what if stepping into it and actually feeling it and facing it just reminded us that there was light around it and that carrying it around might actually be harder, right?
Pain and hard emotions always have so much to teach us.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's been one of the most powerful things I've learned in the past couple of years is like, if I am willing to sit with my pain or my depression or my anxiety or my fears, if I can really lean in and ask them, what are you here to teach me? What messages do you have for me? It's interesting how they all eventually come back to a loving message.
Mm.
Like they're all somehow here to help me or to protect me or to keep me safe. And it might not be serving me anymore, but it's always coming from a place of love. It's part of me, right? Mm-hmm. All of these are different parts.
Love that.
And I remember, you know, Sophie Diloff, she led us through that really amazing exercise of shadow work that we did in our.
I remember that too.
And I ended up doing a bunch more of that in the year that followed because I found that just incredible to think there are all these abandoned parts of ourselves that we want to push away or ignore, neglect, or put in the basement, whatever. Mm-hmm. And what happens when we start inviting them to the table and having conversations with them?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard work. Literally, it's so liberating.
Yeah. Because how can you, like you said, some of them don't belong, but if you don't invite them, you can't release them.
Yeah. And, you know, I like that you picked up on that because I'm starting to believe that they all belong, but that they're here because they might need something. They might need their own tending to from us. I had to take the whole summer off from drinking alcohol. And I, you know, I've listened to a lot of the past episodes of your podcast. So I know that there's been this amazing conversation discussion around sobriety and addiction and using substances to deal with our pain. And I took 3 months off from drinking. And, you know, if you talk to anyone who knows me well, no one would ever say, oh, she has a drinking problem or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it was coming more from a place of the intention with which I was using the alcohol, right? Like the escape mechanism or the, I'm so stressed and I just need a break or, it could be boredom. I mean, there are a lot of reasons that I had to really explore and confront and it was really eye-opening to do that.
Oh, thanks for sharing that. Yeah. I think it's true with that, you know, the end of the day, I've done that. And I've also become aware, especially with my sober sis interview and, you know, just why, you know, it's one thing if you do it in celebration, it's another thing if you're like, oh, this has been a really stressful day, which I think is what comes along with that end of the day wine drinking a lot for people. Yeah. So that's interesting that you explored that.
I explored that. And then at the end of the summer, I said, okay, now I'm going to feel it out. And I, for the last 6 weeks, have kind of reintroduced, I guess you could say, having wine, you know, with friends or, I actually just had a very good life coaching session myself because I have my own life coach.
Yes, of course.
And I just decided it's time to shed the next layer of what I feel has been holding me back or interrupting my integrity. Mm. And it's not to say anything about anyone else and what they decide to do, mm-hmm. but just for myself, I'm actually committing to total sobriety and with both weed and alcohol. Mm. And it's so new. It's very nascent for me that it's a little scary to even like say it.
Say it out loud.
Yeah. Say it out loud. But I think it's important because in, you know, the 3 months I took over this summer, it was very much an internal, private kind of experiment. Like, what does this feel like? How do I deal with the things that come up that I would usually use alcohol to help numb out? Mm-hmm. You know, I told my coach, I told my husband, but it was very much an internal process. And this time around, I feel like I'm not only committing to it at a deeper level, but that I really want to create community around it. Like it's a little bit more now, I feel like I want to put it out there a little bit more and connect with others who are also moving through this process. Nice. And again, it's not as if I had a severe drinking problem, you know, but it was the gray area drinking, right?
Yeah.
That you've brought up in previous episodes that at some point I just had to say, this hasn't been serving me for a while. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like the next step into fully owning, you know, my power.
Yeah. Oh, I can relate to that so much myself. And also, because the attention piece is big for me. And again, I'll just echo the same experiment myself. And I only was someone that had maybe a glass of wine once, maybe twice a week, you know, maybe even paired with dinner. But at some point I was like, you know, I had some heart palpitations or, you know, it just was like, also there were times when I was doing the like, oh, it's the end of the day, I just want to relax, a glass of wine would be nice, right? Yes. Or you're going to a gathering with people, like we're challenged around this, but I'm with you, Caitlin, in that I'm like, I want to build community though that aligns with authenticity. And I don't, you know, I once you sort of explore that for yourselves and you look out at the world, you realize the brokenness in so many ways around that. Yeah. And we've gotten there just as a society. And I think it crept up on us in some ways. So, you know, it's just like anything else, that those of us that can sort of stand in what our truth is and not judge others, like you said, right. And I talk to people in recovery where I work, it's hard because sometimes when you make a choice, other people think you're judging them for their choices. Right. And that becomes a little bit difficult. But even I know you eat really healthy and even when you show up with a certain, you know, things you just aren't willing to ingest, that's sometimes hard too. It's the same sort of thing really. Right.
Yeah. It's again, it's just checking in with our own integrity and the more that you tap into your body compass, the more refined it becomes. Mm. And you start to really pick up on what is nourishing you and what's not.
Yeah.
You know, I was laughing with my coach because I'm like, God damn it. Like really my wine, you know, it's like, it's not convenient. Yeah. A lot of the times when you are stepping closer into your integrity, you know, it's not going to be convenient most of the time.
I like that.
You know,
it's not convenient. Yes.
Yeah. But if you're being really honest with yourself, right? Yeah. It's like this alcohol is causing this symptom and this symptom. And accentuating, you know, this that I don't want to accentuate. And it's just, you just have to at some point be like, well, what am I going to do here?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it is this one precious life.
Yes.
Yes. And, you know, feeling clean, clear, and bright, to be able to really navigate our way. It's just like, what builds that and what takes away from it, right? I mean, it kind of comes down to really simply what's in your container that belongs and what doesn't belong, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I really, that idea of the, I think it's Jnana Yoga. It's like, the not this, not that, you know? And that's what I feel like it's been a process of, not this, okay, not that. And not to condemn this or that, but just to say, it's like a shedding away of all of the layers that keep us small, right? And you do that over and over again in all these micro ways. It doesn't have to be dramatic or glamorous at all. It usually isn't. Just these subtle little ways that allow you to expand fully.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to say too, Marian, you do such a great job emphasizing this on this podcast, but how much of a process and a practice it is. Mm-hmm. And it's so not reaching a state of perfection.
Yeah.
Or like reaching it and then like being like, okay, I'm good now.
I've arrived. Yay. Nothing else to do. Drive, you know, like mic drop.
Yeah,
take that expectation away and maybe just embracing that it is a journey and it can be beautiful and it can be hard at the same time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Having guides is incredibly important. And, you know, what a gift, like for you to have walked this and to be able and like have really like reached for such a deep level of understanding in a way that you can guide others. Caitlin, I mean, it's really pretty beautiful and you articulate it incredibly well. I think that it's hard for a lot of people to wrap their arms around a process that makes sense, but we do need that navigation. And
thank you.
Yeah.
I'm very much on my journey, you know, still so much to learn and expand into. But I am so grateful for all of the teachers and guides that have come my way and all of the trainings I've been able to be a part of.
Yeah.
And also all of the intense challenges that have come my way that sucked in that moment, but have taught me so much about who I am and what I really want, what really matters to me.
Yeah. That's nice. Now, do you feel like you've, I mean, we've shared a lot. I know you get out in the woods and I know you get on the earth. And is that, that must be a big tool of resiliency for you, I would imagine, or what keeps you on your path?
Absolutely. Getting into nature, always, always, always. Mm-hmm. Living in Maine, close to the coast, myself and my husband and my dog, either together or just my dog and I am out on a trail almost every day, walking by the water or in the woods. And that's really my spiritual sanctuary. You know, that's really where I go to like reconnect or to allow the stress to melt away. Yeah. So getting in nature has always been really important to me, even as a kid and young adult. And it's something I practice to this day. And then yin, of course, that's my primary yoga practice now. And meditation as well. You know, nothing long, it's like 20 minutes in the evening, but it's just that, like, again, checking in and coming into stillness at the end of the day and before sleeping. And a more recent practice too, this is one I'm still very much integrating into my life, but just leaving my phone downstairs from like 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., just like not going on my phone.
Nice.
That's been a game changer for me in terms of the quality of sleep that I can get and the time I go to sleep. Yes, nourishing foods. I mean, I love you always end your podcast like, eat your greens, people. So I've been thinking of you recently because I do try to eat greens just about every day. You know, I don't follow any particular rigid diet at all. So I'm not a purist by any means, but I just kind of go with Michael Pollan's very short phrasing of like all of his food wisdom. He says, what is it? Eat real food, not too much, mostly plants.
I like that too.
Like his adage for like tying everything into these very short phrases. Yes. And it's so true. It's like, I just try to eat real food, whole foods, unrefined, nourishing foods. Not too much. I stop before I'm full. I don't snack a lot, so that I eat when I'm actually really hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly plants.
Mm. You know? Nice. I love that. Thank
Works
you.
For me.
Yeah. Well, and you're glowing, so I know that you're doing some things right. That's for sure. Oh, and you're just like on the path, Caitlin, and I'm just so grateful to have you here sharing that. All of it. I think for people listening, you know, it's just, it's nice to have a little navigation tools and you have it. Not only that, but you offer it as a resource to people, and we'll have, tell us about what you do offer.
Yeah. So, I offer a 3-month coaching program.
Okay.
I by no means will kick you out after 3 months. We can still work together longer than that. But I think it's a nice place for people to start to think to themselves, I can invest in 3 months. And it's one-on-one coaching. And it's 75-minute sessions every other week with me over the phone. There's also full support, though, between the sessions, too. Mm-hmm. So I'm available email, text, voice memo for my clients. And it's really a process of what we just talked about. It's like, let's just take a breath, slow down a little, see if we can nourish ourselves and realign with what it is that makes you come alive, right? Body, soul, heart, mind. Mm. And as we do that, limiting beliefs are going to come up and challenges are going to come up, and we will navigate those together. So it's very much a partnering with my clients so that they get to design a life around their values in honor of their integrity instead of listening to what society tells them their life should look like, right?
Yeah. And it sounds like you have some incredible tools you pull upon to guide people through the process of peeling back and like understanding all those pieces deep within.
Yeah, I absolutely love the tools that I've been able to bring into this iteration of my coaching. They're creative, they're fun, they light up the right brain a lot. So there's a lot of play and imagination.
Oh, nice.
And I think it makes it really interesting and fun for both me and the client.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm offering these days is one-on-one life coaching.
Thank you so much. And we'll have a link to you have a website?
Yeah, you can find me, Caitlin B. Daphne Coaching. And I know you'll link to that. Mm-hmm. Really the best way to connect with me is to go onto my website and book a discovery call. And that's completely complimentary. It's like 1 hour of coaching. I mean, I can tell you about my program, but it's really a chance just like, let's connect, allow me to coach you a bit on something that's really bugging you. And so, you know, regardless of whether you decide to work with me one-on-one, it's like, you get to walk away with something really valuable. You get to have something shift for you. So that's just a free 1-hour call. And
nice.
That's kind of the best way to connect. Yeah.
Yeah. Love that. Oh, so great. Well, once again, you shared so much. If there is any little parting wisdom like you would like to share as people navigate their way and try to stay resilient amongst the waves of life, is there one thing you would say?
It's okay to slow down and to nourish yourself.
Mm.
Culture will tell us it's not okay. and that our worth is based on productivity. And that's just not true. You're whole, you are infinitely wise, and you are valuable just as you are. There's nothing to fix. There's nothing broken about you. And the easiest way to embrace that and realize that is to slow down and nourish yourself. Allow yourself rest. It is the most important thing that we can do for ourselves in a world that moves at 1,000 miles per hour. And when you look to nature, it's amazing how much animals sleep, how much animals rest and spend their days napping and resting and sleeping. So just remember that, you know, we are animals. We do need to rest in order to thrive.
Oh, I love that. Thank you. As I sit here watching my puppy sleep, and I'm always amazed at how much she sleeps.
I know.
And then she plays hard and then she sleeps. So, oh, yes. Thank you so, so much, Caitlin. Such a gift. Really,
thank you,
so incredibly grateful.
And thank you for what you're doing and offering this community. It is so invaluable, and you're bringing stories and helpful guidance to us all. So sincerely, I thank you for doing what you're doing. You are also following your calling in the world.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a gift to be able to show up in this way, for sure.
Again, thank you all for showing up and supporting the podcast. If you wanted to extend your support, you could subscribe to the podcast and give us a rating or a comment. All those things help to expand this podcast and to reach more people. If you're someone that feels like you have a story you'd like to share and this podcast aligns with you, reach out. I'd love to talk to you. Our stories are powerful, you guys, and it's really how we're going to help support each other during this huge transformation that's happening in our world. And, you know, some of it's dividing us or helping us to stand in our truth and maybe honoring other people that are standing in theirs. But by telling our stories, we can begin to understand different perspectives, different ways to heal around our differences. And just how to embrace this journey, right? It's this one precious life, and it's hard at times and it's joyful at times. And let's try to build as much joy as we can, I say. So find something to celebrate today, maybe a kind gesture towards someone else. And as always, don't forget the power of the plants. See you guys next time.